Welcome to episode 54 of Eat, Drink, Write, an Urban Fantasy Whiteboard. We really aren't sure if this is episode 54.
We were talking about it today, and we haven't done this for a year yet, so theoretically there should be like 52 episodes, but then we released two for the first episode, so maybe 53, but where did 54 come? We don't know.
So anyway, we're going with it. It's 54. We're going to do writing emotional scenes today.
Yeah.
It's kind of along the lines of one of Jen's. Jen would like us to write about sex scenes and the heavy, which I guess this is that one, the heavy scenes, because emotional scenes could also be deep scenes as well as happy, sad, whatever scenes.
Right.
So first, before we get into all that, how was your week?
I'm tired of grad school again.
Well, that didn't take very long.
Well, I think I've been tired of grad school for a while, and I'm just back at it now, so it's very exhausting and just very thought-consuming and annoying and pressure-y. There's a stigma with grad school about it being awful and bad, whatever, and mm-hmm. It's true. There's that. But I have been working on one of my books. I said, I think, last week that I was working on two at the same time, and I focused on one more this week. My cat's also being a butt, so that is also this week. So I've gotten some writing done. I think I did like 5,000 words yesterday, so that's pretty good.
That's very good. Yeah, I'm just working, trying to get caught back up after the vacation thing. My back is still killing me, so it's very hard to sit in a chair. Actually, while I'm sitting in the chair, I'm fine. It's whenever I move that the pain happens. So anyway, but I'm trying to organize. I'm trying to get the craft room set back up again. And I have been pinning ideas into my Harper board on Pinterest. So that's
very... Oh, you started a Pinterest board for her.
I did. And I've got scenes and characters, which I have no idea who these characters are, but they struck me. And I'm like, yep, that person's in this book. Don't know how or who or why yet, but that person's here. So that was exciting. Yeah.
That's awesome.
What are you eating and drinking?
I'm going to eat it after this because it's going to be dinner since we're recording a little bit late, but it's a special Cubano sandwich that I ordered last night. So it's got like hot dogs on it. It's like a Cuban sandwich with like hot dog on it and then egg and jalapeno and avocado and all this stuff.
Calientitos?
It's not. If I order Calientitos, I'm getting a fish burrito. This is a different local place.
Okay.
It's called Taqueria La Paria, I think. Hmm. And it's pretty good. It's got really good food, but it is not Calientitos.
I love Calientitos.
I do too.
Make it over there anymore. What are you drinking?
I know. I'm drinking hot chocolate again because I'm doing laundry today. And my laundry building is a building over and it's cold and it's raining. So I was going to do a pickleback, but I'm cold. So I decided to do hot chocolate.
I see. Yeah, I'm cold too, but I've got a heater on my feet is a feeder. So I'm feeling a little bit better, but I'm drinking a kamikaze. Oh. In new glasses that I got from Santa Claus.
And, nice.
I've got Santa Claus also brought me some really cute little hors d'oeuvre sticks that are cocktail sticks. And this one has a snowflake on it, which I thought was quite appropriate since I'm freezing my butt off.
Yes.
We're actually maybe supposed to get some snow tonight.
Are you serious? That's fun.
Yeah, I think we might actually be able to see some tomorrow. It won't stick or anything, but it would be cool to see some. And so I've got my background up on Zoom that has snow in the background. So
I know. I was going to say something about it because it looks amazing. That looks like a restaurant with like all that snow out in the back. That looks so fantastic.
Isn't it beautiful? I'm having a really good time finding these Zoom backgrounds. So might use this one for court this month. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fun.
I have jokes.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, I'm not eating anything because Daddy's making dinner. He's making chips and cabbage and butternut squash and chicken thighs.
Well, that sounds nice.
Yeah, it smells heavenly.
I love chicken thighs.
Yeah, he forgot. Well, he didn't look. And so they're chicken thighs without skin, which to me, the skin is the best part. Being on keto, we can eat the fat. So we'll see. We'll see how it is. He's a little disappointed too. When he got home, he's like, where's the fat? Where's the skin? I don't know, honey.
I don't know.
Okay. Jokes.
Yeah.
What do you call a cold ghost?
What?
Casper.
Oh my God.
Where did the ghost go on vacation?
Where?
The Bahamas.
Oh, bless.
One more, another really bad one.
Okay.
What do ghosts eat for dinner?
What?
Spaghetti.
All right.
Yeah, I was in a ghost mood today, so there you go.
I could tell.
All right, so writing emotional scenes. So you know how you get to the end of a book and you feel like you're in a daze? You just, that book sucked you into it so that the real world doesn't even feel real to you anymore. You're living in that book world. And when it's over, you kind of have that book hangover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is because we are emotionally invested in that book.
Yeah.
And so that is what we're going to talk about today, is how to get your reader emotionally invested in your book. Keep in mind that there is such a thing as too deep of going into emotions, like melodrama. You don't want to be melodramatic.
Oh, well, maybe you do. I love melodrama. It's fun. I use it in my everyday life.
Yeah. There are people that are dramatic, and you're usually not one of them. But,
I'm kidding. It's a joke.
But there are people that actually, you know, soap operas, for God's sakes, that's all they are, is drama. And they are that stereotypical drama.
Right.
And that's generally not what we're wanting to evoke in our readers. I mean, there is a place for that, and there is a time for that. So maybe so, but that's not what we're talking about here tonight.
Right. I mean, I also feel like that's a characterization thing. I feel like that's more of a satire type of thing.
Some romance novels, you have that formula that you go through, and the melodrama because they can't manage to communicate with each other. There is a place for that. I love romance novels. I go through romance novels by, you know, the I was going to say bushel. That's not quite right. Books don't come in bushels.
Not quite right.
Whatever. By the shelf, I guess. We're not talking about that type of emotion. We want to talk about the true gut-wrenching emotion that we want our readers to feel for our characters.
Right.
So that being said, how do you evoke, wow, yeah, I'm a writer. That intense emotion in your reader. How do you make them feel what your character is going through without being over the top and melodramatic?
Right.
So we've talked about this before, but showing versus telling.
I mean, that's a big one.
That is a big one. Rather than report what your character is doing and feeling, you've got to write it in a way that shows it. So you focus on the action and the reaction.
Right.
So for example, fear. Cindy was afraid to go into the basement. Okay. We've told the reader that Cindy was it, but they're not feeling that. They're like, okay, yeah, it makes sense she'd be afraid. And it might, that's okay. But what about Cindy's hand trembled as she reached for the doorknob?
Right.
That is evoking a whole different sense of feeling in the reader than just telling us that Cindy was afraid.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about with showing versus telling, which, you know, that goes, we talk about that all the time. You want to bring your reader into your character so that the reader is feeling what the character feels. And a good way to do that is through word choice, like the word tremble, shook, she bit her lip, shallow breaths, that kind of thing evokes those feelings in the reader as the character is feeling them.
Yeah, I think word choice is honestly the best way to bring your reader into the headspace of your character, because you know what a trembling hand feels like. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying she was afraid, which like you said is fine, but she was trembling or her hand trembled, immediately brings your reader into, oh, well, I know what it's like when my hands start trembling. I know that I do that when I'm afraid.
Yes.
And so it reminds your reader of it and makes the experience more realistic.
Yeah, it gives a connection because the reader has felt afraid too. I've been scared before where I've been shaking.
Right.
And we all know what that means. So that there's that immediate connection. You want to make your reader identify with the character, which is exactly what you just said. We talked about before the empathy and sympathy with the character.
Yeah.
Think about what you're trying to get your reader to feel.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the important things about this is to like identify the emotion you're trying to convey, but also mm-hmm. the reason behind that emotion that your character is feeling. So like despair and sadness, like this will let you dig into the heavy emotion that you want to get across in your scene if you know why they're feeling that emotion. And then try to avoid using the specific word for the emotion you're trying to convey. So like, don't say despair if you want your readers to feel despair.
Right.
Cause there was a tip that I read and it said your reader like could feel boxed in or trapped into feeling that, when they didn't get to decide if they felt that themselves.
That's true.
And that made sense. I feel like that was a weird sentence that I just said,
but I understood it. And I think writers will understand that.
Hopefully.
So, you know, along those lines, identifying what it is that you want your reader to feel, you want your reader generally to dislike your villain. So use the character's actions to evoke that feeling, you know, have them be cruel.
Right.
Things that evoke anger and repugnance and disdain are really good ways to have your reader feel those things when your character is acting that way.
Right.
Don't be two-dimensional, though. You don't want to overdo the stereotypes of, oh, I want him to feel good, so he's going to save a cat from a tree, you know?
Right.
So there are, just don't be stereotypical, but think of those stereotypes, and it might help you come up with what you're trying to do in your book.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's so easy, I feel like, to fall into writing stereotypical actions for characters,
mm-hmm.
Especially villains, just because, you know, it's like, oh, my villain is going to do the evil monologue kind of thing. But also with heroes, because, you know, they might be the too good, must always do the right thing without thought is also like a stereotype.
You know, that annoys me when the villain, I can't remember any of the books that do this now off the top of my head, but at the end of the book where there is this grandstand monologue where the villain is telling the hero why he's doing that, should all have been gotten out beforehand.
Yeah.
In the real world, you don't stand there and waste time. If you're going to kill this person, you're going to kill this person. So,
right.
Yeah. I agree with you. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that does annoy me.
No, it annoys me too. And I have definitely been guilty of it, especially like back when I first started writing, I was very much like, oh, I get to the end. And obviously like I need to make everything super clear. So my villain would always be like, well, this is why I did everything. And my main character is just like, oh, really? Like, yeah, I'm going to sit here and listen to you talk. And it's just hilarious, like looking back at my old drafts, because I'm like, oh, no. Like, oh, my God.
But, I mean, the good thing is that you knew that that information had to be gotten across. You just didn't know yet at that stage in your writing how to do it.
Right. Yeah.
So at least you were ahead of the game because you knew that that information needed to come out to make that end the way it needed to be.
Yeah. And I try really hard now to spread it out across the book. Like there should be clues as to, you know, what your villain is doing,
mm-hmm.
Which we did a villain episode. So go find that if you're curious.
Yes, definitely.
But give your character conflict with their decisions. So like this is going off of your don't be stereotypical
mm-hmm.
Thing. You know, give your character conflict with their decisions and your reader will feel more emotionally invested in the outcome.
And, you know, I should say, in your first draft, it's okay to be stereotypical because that gets it on paper what you're trying to get across. And
right.
You can go back later and fix how, you know, because sometimes if you don't get it on paper, you're not going to remember what it is that you're trying to do. So if you have to do it in a stereotypical way in your first draft, that's fine. But that's not how you want to submit it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can use cruelty and things like that for villains. Think about your main character. What are their character traits? What is the crux of that character's persona? Okay, I am on my second kamikaze. So I brought two down because I knew I was going to drink it really fast. It's been a long day and my back is killing me. So
fair enough.
Use actions of the hero also to evoke the empathy that you want to get across.
Yeah, which I think we talked about either last week or the week before. I can't remember at this point.
Yeah, about, I was trying to remember that too. Which episode was that we talked about?
Honestly, I have no idea. We record at weird days sometimes. So I can't keep straight in my head, like which one goes to which week always.
Yeah,
so I don't remember if this one was last week or if it was the week before.
It was recently remember. Though. So show the reactions and response of the characters to the actions and response of another character, which is also something we talked about recently as well. Having other characters react helps your reader see how they're supposed to, not necessarily how they were supposed to, but we're inclined to notice what other people think about something and react the same way.
Right.
So keep in mind that the reader isn't going to be affected by deep emotions on page one. They don't know them yet. They don't know our characters yet because there are no ties yet. So you want to make those ties as you're writing. You probably can't have, well, you can't ever say can't, but you shouldn't probably have a deep emotional scene right off the bat because there is nothing to connect to yet for us to feel what the character's feeling. We can see that the character is in pain and all of that, and we might feel empathetic and, oh, poor person, but we aren't feeling those feelings like we want our readers to feel those feelings.
Right. I think I remember at our conference, the panel of agents that would read our opening pages and then comment on them. I think one of them said, don't ever start with a character who's just running. And I think I've talked about this on the podcast
before. I think we have too, yeah.
And, you know, that would be a deeply emotional scene. It should be suspenseful. It should be, you know, like, oh my God, what are they running from? Like, are they going to make it? Are they going to die? You know, that kind of thing. But right from the get-go, you know, it's very hard to connect with that character. I don't know who that is. I don't know what they're running from. I don't really care if they die because I don't know them. Mm-hmm. So just as an example.
Yeah. And, you know, when we think of these heavy scenes, death and injury aren't the only ways to get, that's a great way. That is definitely a great way to get those really heavy feelings across. But you can find other ways to hurt your character. We, as writers, we do that. We throw lots of rocks at our poor little characters. But think about misunderstandings and betrayals and choices where you're forced to pick between two really bad choices, you know, betraying a friend or saving this other, you know, those, we all as readers feel that anguish inside when that happens. You've got to be sure to have built in and shown that relationship in order for that pain to be felt by the reader. For example, just telling the reader that the main character betrays their best friend isn't enough. You need to understand why they felt that. And right now I'm watching Black Sails, and I know you watched it, but it's been a long time since you've watched it. But Jack, I don't know if you remember any of the characters, but Jack and Anne were like this unit. They were always together. He had rescued her and they were just always together. They had each other's back all the time. It was expected by both of them that they would always have each other's back. As the story goes along, we start to see little snippets of why they're so closely connected. He killed her husband when she was 13 years old because he was beating her and burning her and sharing her with his friends and laughing while they, you know, raped her, and Jack slit his throat. So we now understand this bond that they have with each other, so that when he betrays her, we're devastated. I went to bed after watching that episode and I was like, how could he do that? How could he absolutely do that? That's just wrong. He did the wrong thing. And they did a really good job in the show of showing how the betrayal affected her. And we're just heart-wrenched because he saved her and now betrayed her. And we, as the reader, watcher, whatever, felt that. Do you remember that at all?
I don't remember the betrayal. Yeah. I remember the characters, but I don't remember any of the storylines, really.
Yeah, it was just, I'm just really into that story right now. I know I'm going to have a series hangover when this one's over because I am totally invested in this world.
I remember liking it. I remember it was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but on that, you know, talking about betrayal, mix it up. Mix up the different rocks that you throw at your main character and do it at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, betrayal and then an immediate death after that betrayal, there would be a lack of closure there, and that can evoke a strong emotional response in your reader.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the key is to have built that connection to the point where, I mean, I was mortified when he did that. I just couldn't believe that he did. And yes, his choices were awful. And in his mind, he thought that he could circle back to her after making this choice. And so in his mind, it wasn't that bad. But to her, the world just dropped out from underneath her feet.
Yeah.
And we felt that. It was anguish for the reader, the watcher, to go through that.
Yeah.
Along those lines, don't be afraid to kill off characters.
Yes, I love that one. I think we could probably do a whole episode on killing off characters.
I think that's a great idea.
I feel like that makes me sound a little sadistic, but
writers are sadistic. We really are.
It's true. Yeah, killing off characters is fun because of the emotional response it can evoke if you do it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, don't be afraid to throw rocks at your character. Big rocks at your character, and three rocks at the same time, like you said.
Yes.
I mean, basically what we're talking about here is we're manipulating the reader, but you don't want it to be obvious that you're manipulating the reader to feel these things. Every choice that we make in how we write a scene, the words we choose, all of those things are used intentionally to manipulate the reader to go with the plot, to feel what we want them to feel. And that's fine, but nobody wants to be manipulated. So you've got to be aware of what you're doing so that it's not trite, and don't insult your reader. You know,
right.
They are smart.
Yeah.
Again, word choice is huge. I mean, that
it's big. I mean, you can't avoid, you know, the whole point of writing is that it's an art, and you're trying to get across these feelings, these emotions in your reader that you're feeling for these characters that you've created. I really think about word choice the most, I think, in the rewrite, like editing revision stages, is when I most think about what words I really want to use in a scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even when I'm first writing, like, there are certain words that just come across in the first draft that, I think, create a certain atmosphere for a scene that you want.
I liked what you said, the word art, because
yeah.
I am an artist as well. And I often compare the art of writing to the art of painting and drawing and that kind of thing, because I do both. And you really are painting with words. You are, you know, any other artists out there, when you are working, like, I work with alcohol ink a lot, and I love it because it just blends, and writing is the same way. You're blending these words to create this emotion in your reader's mind.
Yeah.
So I love that you said that word, art.
I think it is an art. I think, mm-hmm. I really enjoy the term wordsmith. Mm-hmm. You know, 'cause I think the way that you pair words together and the way that you can make people think just depending on the words that you put together, I think is definitely an art.
I think so too. Words on their own, they can evoke feelings. That word tremble, just the word by itself, evokes a feeling.
Yeah.
Why is she trembling? Is it fear? Is it excitement? Is it, you know, are they quivering with anticipation? You know, quiver is another good word.
Right, right.
But mix them into the scene, and that is the best way to build that emotion that you're trying to get to.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And then don't skip scenes that are a part of your character's emotional journey. A lot of tips say that, you know, cut anything that doesn't lend to the plot of your story. But subplots, I think it's important to remember that, like, subplots are important, and emotional development for your character makes a really good subplot.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of the scenes that involve only emotion and not much action often make me go like, do I actually need this in my manuscript as I'm writing it, like, personally? And then, you know, now that we've researched this, the more that I've learned about writing, the more that I look into subplots and the structure of a story, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you need to keep those, you know, because if you manage to get across your character's emotions, it lends to the overall story and also invests your reader.
Yeah, you just want to be concise about it. And I'm not, you don't have to do this on your first draft. You are not going to write the great American novel on the first draft. You're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
So when you're going back, you can then tighten it up and make it concise and take out words. I'm not saying to take out that scene, because like you said, that scene is important to show the arc, the emotional arc or journey that your I almost said client, that your character is going on.
They're kind of clients, I guess.
I guess. Anyway, I don't know what I was talking about.
Well, I'll move on to my next point then.
Okay.
Aim for authenticity, not the emotion itself. So have your characters speak and behave like people you interact with in your everyday life do. You know, being your family, your best friends, people that you don't get along with, etc. Think about everyone that you personally interact with, and honestly, just write it that way. It'll feel more real. It'll allow your reader to connect with your characters because it feels real.
That's a great point. It goes back to we are manipulating our readers, but you can only bend so far. So yes, be real with what you're writing. Think about how you would react in this circumstance, which is sometimes hard because I will never be in circumstances that some of my characters are in. I don't even know what I would do if I were in those circumstances, but you want a realistic reaction. We're back to the reaction again, based on your character and what your character has done. I hate reading those books where I'm like, that character would not have done that. It drives me nuts. So make it real for what you have already built. If you are trying to get somewhere and you can't force it, that means you might need to go back and rewrite and chop stuff out to make it get more easily to where you're trying to get to. You cannot bend it to get there.
Yeah.
And you can't force your reader to feel something. You've got to finesse it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it kind of lends to my next point too, which is your personal experiences can help you a lot. Mm-hmm. That kind of goes hand in hand with what I was just talking about. So, you know, think back on a time when you've experienced the emotions that you're trying to convey. So you don't necessarily need to have gone through what your main characters are going through, especially in urban fantasy. I personally have not come up against any magic that side, you know, in my real life. I don't know. I just have not yet. So, you know, obviously my characters are going to experience things that I have never experienced. But what I can do is think about, oh, well, my character is afraid. When have I been afraid before? And I can go back to that and use my own experiences of fear to convey those through my character.
Do you ever act out the expressions? Your dad 100%. Laughs at me.
Oh, I do it all the time.
He laughs at me because we sit across from each other.
Yeah.
And so when I'm writing, I'm like, okay, how does, you know, I'm frowning. And he's like, what the hell are you doing? I'm writing, okay?
I do it all the time. I don't think I've done it in front of Sydney yet. So whenever we move in together, she's going to be like, who did I just move in with? This person is crazy. But yeah, I don't think I've done it in front of her yet. She's gotten my 1,000-yard stare plotting expression where I just like sit there and I'm just staring at nothing, and she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm good, I'm just thinking about writing.
Yep. The insides are going. Yep, it's percolating inside.
Yeah, but I absolutely do act out scenes, not entire scenes, but like, you know, I'll think of the expression and I think of the tone, and so I'll catch myself saying it in the car as I'm driving.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I'm glad there's no one in the car with me, but whatever.
I mean, it really does. I mean, how better to write it than to experience it first?
Yeah.
So
I do the hand motions a lot. Anything mm-hmm. I'm like trying to describe with like, oh, she flicked her hand, and like, oh, okay, this mm-hmm. is how like what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, absolutely.
Yep, me too.
Yeah.
It's a writer thing. I'm sure our listeners
have. I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. But think about the thoughts that you had when you experienced these emotions that you're trying to convey. The actions you personally took, the things that you said. Think about your friends and your family, like experiences that they've been through that you didn't experience yourself. And how did they react to things? Did you think they were crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you might, but also your characters may react that way as well. So, you know, use those to elicit a connection with your reader.
Yeah.
Oh, I found a really interesting thing as I was researching for this. It was written by Anne Brown on writerunbox.com. So first of all, just like a little side note, writerunbox.com, I first read it as writerunbox.com. And it confused me a lot as I was.
Oh yeah, it does look like Write Run Boxed.
Yes, but I'm pretty sure it's just Writer Unboxed, and I'm just, you know, who I am. Anyway, it's by Anne Brown on writerunboxed.com. If you are writing a sad scene, then if at all possible, delete the part where the character cries, sobs, and wails. And I thought that was really interesting. She says, you know, some of the best advice that she had ever gotten was, if the character cries, then your reader doesn't have to. And that was a really interesting quote.
Interesting. I love that.
Because I had never thought of that before. Like, that had never occurred to me. If you have to make your character cry, then, you know, I don't know. It was just so interesting. Because, I mean, like, obviously, I feel like your character's going to cry at some point. But if you can delete that and still get that emotional response, I think it might make it more powerful. I just thought it was interesting.
That is super. That's super.
Yeah. And then also, I can't remember, like, for the life of me who said this, but it sticks in my memory due to imagery. But, like, when you want to get across the horror of a scene, like the heaviness of emotion, focus on small detail. Like, there's something that I remember specifically where it's like, if there was a school shooting or like a bomb or something like that, then you focus on a kid's bloody shoe. You know, you don't focus on like the entire destruction of the building. You don't focus on, but it was the bloody shoe of a kid who was caught in a crossfire or whatever.
That gives me goosebumps. So yeah, I know exactly. You're right. I know you're right. Yeah.
And it is horrific, and that's what you're trying to get across. And you focus on these weird, tiny, specific details, but it also creates this vivid imagery in your reader's mind that is going to.
And I think that that's an accurate depiction of what might happen. I mean, obviously I've never been in a school shooting, but the horror of what is going on is so overwhelming that you can't take the whole big picture in. You might just focus on the kid's untied shoelace,
right?
And, you know, obsess about that kid's going to trip if I don't tie a shoe, which at this point, because there's gunfire going everywhere, means nothing. But the brain and your body is trying to assimilate what is going on around you. And so I think that is an accurate thing. I, you know, we might have to interview some psychiatrists at some point to find out or research that kind of emotional response at some point.
That would be really interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are other ways to increase emotions. Put your characters in life or death situations, impose a time limit.
I mean, that's suspense right there.
Yeah. Which I think we talked about when adding mystery, mm-hmm. time limits was a way to add mystery. Mm-hmm. Add conflicts.
Yep.
Adjust the pace. And a lot of times you adjust the pace through sentence structure, through
word choice
again. Mm-hmm. But like we had talked about in an episode earlier, how action is really short, choppy sentences because things are happening fast, fast, fast.
Yeah.
So adjust the pace to the emotion that you're trying to get across.
Yeah.
Use the senses to
Absolutely.
add the feeling that you're going for. The setting and the scene can also help bring emotion into, you know, if you're in shadows and darkness and cold, that automatically makes your reader feel something.
Dark and cold.
Yeah. Dark and cold.
Yeah.
Then be prepared to be emotional yourself.
Yeah.
I cry. I cry when I write my own book. I laugh out loud when I write my own books.
I mean, I feel like if you don't have any emotion as the author, then there's not going to be any emotion as the reader. So definitely, I think.
And poor daddy and poor Sydney to come. I mean, it's when I killed off all the elves in one of my books, I was devastated.
Yeah.
And yet it worked. So I didn't want to take it, but I didn't want to talk to dad. I didn't want to have anybody around me. I had just gone through this devastating emotional thing as the writer, and I had to process it. Daddy has learned when I'm writing to let me process whatever I'm going through. If I want to talk about it, great. He's there to listen. He's a really good partner.
Yeah.
He has learned that writers are very strange creatures, and he loves me, so he's willing to put up with that. But, and it actually is very helpful to have someone to bounce that off that is not a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I've got you for all the stuff I need for the writing, but you know, I get this emotional turmoil, and then I don't know if I've done the right thing. Did I do the right thing when I killed off all this entire culture of people, this entire race? And
wow.
I'll bounce it off of him. And he doesn't understand the mechanics of the writing part of it, but he is more than willing to listen to me talk through it, which is great.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, be prepared to be emotional yourself. And if you're not, it's probably not the emotional scene that you hope it can be.
Right, right.
Because you should feel it too. You love your characters too. You are your characters.
Yeah, absolutely. So I agree with that.
If you're not feeling it, then try harder.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay.
That's tough love from my mother.
two kamikazes talking.
Try harder. I think that's going to be the motto of the day. Try harder.
Maybe that's what I should name this episode. Try harder.
Wow. I have an interview question.
Okay. I'm not sure that I'm up to answering it, but let's try.
What emotion is easiest for you to write?
Is humor an emotion?
Technically, I don't think so. Maybe.
Humor is natural to me. And I have written, I like the sexual tension, which is also, I'm not sure, an emotion. I'm very good at building that sexual tension.
Yeah.
And I enjoy writing that.
Yeah. You're also really good at writing annoyance.
Like yes.
When your characters get annoyed, like you're really good at conveying that.
Huh. Thank you. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
What about you?
It's funny. I don't know. You know, I'm the one who comes up with these interview questions, and then we get down to like asking the interview question, and I should have an answer because I came up with it like 8 hours ago and I don't. No, I don't know. I think I'm pretty good at frustration, like mm-hmm. writing frustration in my characters. I put my characters through a lot of things that are like unjust, I guess. Like Mac had to go through a lot of BS with her storyline. And I think I was pretty good about getting that frustration across.
You know, I think we're both really good at throwing rocks at our characters. And I think we're very good at the resilience of our characters come through. We're very good at writing how they get through those rocks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of an emotion. The resilience. I mean, a lot of our characters are really, you know, Beck is, I admire her.
Yeah.
I wish I could be like her. She takes adversity and she just gets right on through it. And she gets through it with humor and self-deprecation.
Deprivation.
Don't know.
It's deprivation.
But I mean, she, you know, the rocks we throw at them, they're the strength that they have to pull through.
Yeah.
But again, not really an emotion.
Not an emotion. I think I'm pretty good at anger too. The heat that you feel as an angry person. Mm-hmm. I didn't describe that very well just now, but in my writing, I think I'm pretty good at it.
I think that you might be right. That might be something that you are really, really good at. I'm not sure that I'm as good at anger as I am with the sexual tension.
Yeah.
And the humor.
Well, it's funny. I'm not an angry person, but I think I write it decently enough.
Mm-hmm. I love to write.
I do too. Oh, I have a sentence for this week's sentence challenge. If you guys are interested in it. The sentence is, he showed me a blueprint for a treehouse.
Cool.
Do with that what you will. Write a page, single space, double space, whatever you want. Use that sentence somewhere in it. And if you're interested in sharing, then send it to our email.
Yeah, what we thought we might do if we have enough of a response is, you know, our mini episodes that we do every now and then when we come across something, we thought we might do these as mini episodes, read our readers' sentence challenge stories.
We ought to post them on our... That was very good. We ought to post it on our Twitter, just that there's a place for them to go on our Twitter, our
good
Instagram.
Good idea, on everything, actually. I started posting pictures of our food finally on Instagram. I think I was back to like November and I'm like, oh, I don't think we've posted this. So I started working on that today.
Oh, nice.
So, but I haven't gotten to Twitter or our webpage or anything like that. I am working on it.
Cool.
Yeah, go check out our website at eatdrinkrightpodcast.com. Email us. Our email is there. You can have links to all our social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest. Don't know what else. But come check that out. That's a good starting point to find us. You can email us through that, which is how our patron did. Thank you to Jen. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jen.
Come visit our Patreon if you want to help us and support us. It's patreon.com/EDW podcast. And we will see you next week.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.